My guest is Jim Keith, and he wrote Case Book on the Men in Black. It is creepy. And Jim, I'm going to steal one more minute. We've got, you know, this is radio. We've got a lot of time.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you about how you collected your stories, but I'm going to give you one that just burned through my fax machine.
Okay.
I think you'll find it interesting. Here we go. I've got to tell you about a Men in Black experience that I had a year ago after an art show I presented called Stranger Than Outer Space. It was at the Vancouver Planetarium and presented 50 artists. The theme, in general, was space. But the topic seemed to lean toward UFO abduction. The show was received very well, and we had over 1,500 people come to our opening night. Lots of people seemed to be open to the whole UFO idea. Anyway, the visitations started happening shortly after I started sending out press releases. Jody, my girlfriend, woke up frequently seeing tall, black figures in the room looking down on her. Other times it would be simple mysteries, such as coming home to an apartment that had obviously been tampered with. Things like windows being opened in the dead of winter when we were away, furniture moving about. I didn't believe it at first. I didn't want to think that someone was messing with my private life. We had the show. It went well. I was enjoying my time off from organizing and painting the following evening. Jody called me from across the room and told me to come have a look at this. So I looked out the window from my third floor and looked down into the alley. There, I saw two tall men, both in black, both wearing black baseball caps covering their faces. They were just standing there, staring up at us. I stood there for quite a while, having the eerie feeling that I was being scanned. At one point, I nervously waved at them as to sort of pinch myself. One of them coldly put his hand in the air, confirming that it was us they were looking at. Just then, the phone rang. It was one of the other painters from the art show. He began telling me about a strange dream he had had about a saucer. Jody looked over me and said, "They just disappeared. Disappeared." And she had a look on her face that I'll never forget. I ran to the window and saw they were gone. But she said, "Not gone, but disappeared." That's from Mark in Vancouver, B.C., Canada, Jim.
Fairly classic, eh?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. Is it classic?
It sounds right on the mark, really. No pun intended, but there are dozens of these things, and you get that same sort of thing in the 1700s with for instance, during the plagues in the Middle Ages, there were literal armies of men in black manifesting back then. Sometimes they had sort of medieval trappings about them. They'd be carrying scythes. They'd be seen before outbreaks of the plague. These guys have been around for a while.
Before outbreaks of plague?
Exactly.
Would you then jump to the conclusion that they might have been the source?
You know, it's quite possible, and there are other ways that we could look at this as well. To me, one thing that I've looked at is that reality is maybe a little bit more edgy and malleable than we normally give it credit for. And I'm thinking that the men in black and perhaps a lot of other paranormal circumstances manifest as a reaction to trauma. And my guess is that probably the days of the plague in the Middle Ages were pretty traumatic.
Oh, yes.
But in a way, I think that we may externalize and really shape the horror of a UFO encounter or of a plague encounter or of a death encounter into a true and a real exterior event that takes place. Now, I'm not saying it's not real, and I'm not saying that this is an hallucination, but I think that exterior reality reflects far more our interior reality, and particularly our reality of trauma, than we imagine.
Huh. Dan in Lexington, Kentucky would like to know, have you ever heard of, and it follows, women in black? Has there ever been a case of a woman in black?
off the top of my head, I only recollect one case, and that was during the Mothman encounters back in 66 and 67, which is a wild set of events that I'd love to go into.
Go into it.
Okay. In West Virginia, particularly a town called Point Pleasant, in 66 and 67, there were literally dozens of sightings of UFOs. There were giant birds, winged humanoids, cattle mutilations, and lots of MIB, lots of men in black. And my sense is there was an original paranormal element to that, but then it started to snowball. For instance, John Keel, the main investigator of Mothman, who wrote a book about it, had a background in military intelligence.
You know what? I really don't know if there was a Mothman cartoon or something, but you're telling me about something that really occurred. Who or what was Mothman?
Mothman was this huge, weird-looking humanoid with big wings. That there were probably at least 100 sightings of this guy in West Virginia. In fact, there were a few varieties of Mothman and giant birds. It's an extraordinary a UFO flap, as it were. Another guy that investigated the Mothman was Gray Barker. He was a famous UFO writer back in the 50s. He also happened to be a prolific hoaxer. But while I think that it might have started out with a paranormal element, I think it may have been that the government tweaked this and they used it as a psychological operation or a test tube to try out various forms of psychological control. And it may have been that there was advanced testing going on nearby, but it seems to have been a conglomerate of real paranormality and plus a heavy government involvement as well as hoaxing. Anybody who is interested in the paranormal has to read The Mothman Prophecies by John Keel.
All right. Well, you know, as in the facts that was sent to me a little while ago, if I were doing this sort of work, which I do now that I think about it, and I were to look out my window and there were to appear two men in black just standing there, just staring, whose faces I could not make out, and I stared back, and then finally one of them raised their hands to indicate they meant me, I would take that as a very dire message indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now that I've said it, I'll probably have exactly that happen.
Yeah, that may go along with what I was talking about of externalizing your viewpoint. If you're paranoid of something, it's no doubt going to end up on your doorstep.
Just about everything else has happened to me, so why not the men in black? All right, any other case histories that you'd care to lay on us that you personally consider to be the more interesting?
You know, if I may, Art, could I be real mercenary here and give a number where people could get a copy of the book?
Of course.
Okay. Okay, it's a casebook on the men in black, and it costs $14.95.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, and you can get it at 1-800-680-INET, I-N-E-T, 1-800-680-INET.
All right, I like numbers better. Do you know what the numbers are?
In fact, I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
See, that makes everybody convert it. 1-800-INET. So that would be 1-800-4.
Yeah.
Let me do it. 4-6-3-8.
Better thee than me, because I would have taken 5 minutes figuring it out.
Well, I've got an old-fashioned phone here. You see, that's the problem. You know, a lot of the new phones... don't put that on there for you. I mean, they've just got numbers, so you've got to remember to give it both ways, I have learned. So,
okay.
$14 and how much?
$14.95.
All right. It's a pretty good sized book, too, isn't it? It's, over 216 pages. So it's a good sized book. Anyway, be my guest. What else can you tell us about the Men in Black?
Well, there are many, many interesting encounters. One that I find quite fascinating is that apparently Adolf Hitler encountered a man in black.
Oh?
According to a Governor Roschning of Danzig, Germany, who knew Hitler early in his career, Hitler would wake up the night screaming that he had seen these people dressed in black and that they were the new men and that they were intrepid and cruel and that they horrified him, but that this was the future. And as to whether that's a real Man in Black story, whether it was a real paranormal encounter or just a case of Hitler having the DTs, I really don't know, but I found it interesting.
All right, well, that's Germany, harder to trace. What about here? What about President Kennedy's assassination?
Well, you know, there are a lot of Men in Black occurrences that are centered around the Kennedy assassination. Apparently, on one of the films taken of the motorcade, there is a man in black with a black cape and some old-fashioned hat standing right there at the motorcade. I mean, perhaps it's just a coincidence. There's another case that is perhaps even more interesting, and that is of a fellow named Castillo, who was apprehended in the late 1960s in the Philippines, apparently involved in an assassination attempt on Marcos.
Oh.
Now, when he was apprehended, the Philippine police or Secret Service or whatever they were used a truth drug on him, at which time Castillo came out with this story that apparently he was a multiple personality disorder, and he had like four or more discrete personalities, each with a name, each with an identity, and in fact, I believe he was carrying a number of different ID cards as well. It's a wild story in itself, but the payoff on it was that he believed that he had been involved in an assassination attempt on the president in 63, and that his controller had been a man in black who drove a black Cadillac, who had pasty skin and so forth. So that's probably the best thing I know in terms of the Kennedy assassination.
All right. What do we know about what the men in black have actually done? For example, are the vast majority of the cases simple intimidation? And it's really not simple if you're intimidated. Or do we know instances where men in black, beyond the Dr. Hopkins story, have killed?
I don't know of any instances where a man in black killed anyone, but there are a lot of truly sinister stories from the old days that, like I said, involve these sort of witchcraft elements. It seems that half of the people that were involved with men in black back in those days were involved in eating children and abducting people and in sacrifice and so forth. I don't know.
In doing what with children?
Well, I hate to even mention it, but
did you say eating?
Eating, yeah.
Eating as in Jeffrey Dahmer eating?
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. And if I had it to say over again, I think I would have omitted that detail. But yeah, a lot of those old time stories really are pretty darn sinister.
I was convinced when I was a child that there was something in my closet that would have eaten me given half an opportunity to get out. And to this very day, and people can laugh as they will, I close closets. I don't go to sleep with open closets because that's where things that would eat you come from. I'm serious. It began that way as a child, you know, when you'd go under the covers.
You know, I think childhood offers sometimes a pretty clear doorway into the archetypes of our existence, into the nitty-gritty. I remember as a child, I felt like I was being sucked up into the air and out of the house. And at the time, I had no way of really framing it or understanding it. Looking back on it, I think there might have been something interesting going on there.
Well, I am convinced, Jim, that children, in their innocence, before they have been, in effect, mind-conditioned not to believe in the unbelievable, do it because it's real. I mean, it really is there, so they see and hear and imagine things that later on they are trained not to believe in, so they don't see them later, or they're not aware of them. But the young, innocent, new mind sees things the older, mature, brainwashed mind does not.
Right, and you know that cuts back into my thesis about that we manifest our own reality in the sense that kids often have a number of imaginary playmates. I mean, this is very, very common. And it may be that this isn't delusion, but as we grow older, as we solidify, we exclude these other beings, and it's simply us from then on out. It may be that we are simply changing in terms of our approach and cutting out a lot of the messages and a lot of the beings that are truly around us.
You've got it. All right, Jim. Good cutoff point. Stay right there. Men in Black. There's more to come. I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC. From Russell in Kansas City, Art, you seem troubled by this Men in Black stuff. Nobody seems to have trouble talking about men in white. We call them angels, I believe. So, if we believe in angels, does it not follow that there should be men in black? Is that a proper attitude, Jim?
You know, I'm just reminded of this. I saw a show, it was like, I don't know, the something soap hour back in 1955 or something. This was in very early days TV, and it was about a man in white and a man in black who came to this small town and circulated amongst the people, and the rumor mills got going and so forth. And the man in black was characterized as being a devil or an evil man and so forth, and they finally ended up running the man in black out of town, at which time the man in white made it clear what his purposes was or were, which was that he, in fact, was the evil controller, and that a fashion statement doesn't necessarily always indicate a person's orientation.
Oh, my gosh. It's a good point. As a matter of fact, a very dear friend of mine for many years is in Nevada with us, and you're in Reno, right?
That's correct.
All right. Well, I'm not far from Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, there is John Lear, and the son of Bill Lear. And he did, for years and years, research UFOs and said something to me once that has always bugged me and will until the day I die, and then possibly even beyond that. He said, you know, it's funny, Art, everybody tells you when you die, go to the light, go to the light, go to the light tunnel, all the rest of it. He said, I have been told by reliable sources, it's a trick. It's a trick. And if you go to the light, you're going exactly where you don't want to be going. He said, in fact, you should go to the darkness. And I have almost cursed John ever since for telling me that. So I tell it to my audience. It's something you can sit there and think a little bit about, fashion statements, huh?
You know, I'd heard the same thing from a fellow who wrote a book called War in Heaven, which was a pretty interesting a book about the way that astral beings control the earth. And he said the same darn thing. Watch out for that light.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. That reinforces something to wonder about.
That leaves us in a heck of a position, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. All right. Let's take the remainder of this half hour and still talk about the Men in Black and ask you what other instances. For example, around, I know, before I even get to that, my wife said you asked him about about a woman in black, and he said there was only one story. And she said, I want to hear it, because somehow we got launched into Mothman.
Well, then, what I would say is for your dear wife to crack the darn book. It's a complicated story, and frankly, I don't remember a lot of the details. I'm sort of, in many ways, I'm kind of the mad professor. I dive in to whatever book I'm working on at the time and immerse myself in that subject. And if I've done a book like The Men in Black about a year ago, sometimes the details drop out. I swim in a lot of detail, Art.
All right. I was going to ask you, and now I shall. I have retrieved already a couple of stories from listeners tonight about the Men in Black. How do you get them?
Well, you know, one thing I would like to say is that I think that when we start getting calls, you might be surprised at the frequency of Men in Black stories. I mean, they are all over the place.
I know the phones are ringing off the hook, but I still want to know. Without the resource that I have to just say I want to talk about the Men in Black, let me hear it, you know, how do you go about collecting stories for a book?
Well, it's almost an intuitive thing. I don't really think about how to do it. Primarily, I have fun with it. And I start off by contacting my friends and a network of researchers that I'm associated with. I mean, you know, around the world, I'm on a friendly basis with perhaps at least 50 researchers in this area.
Right.
Then I gather and read everything on the topic. And with the Men in Black, I expect I probably must have read at least 50,000 pages.
Wow.
There is a good deal of material on this. And then as I read this material, I isolate names and addresses and so forth, out of the material. So I get on the willing to talk on the subject. With the Men in Black, there were quite a few people who were reticent about it, but there are other experts on the subject, and I talk to experts and quite a few people who had encounters. But of course, with any book, and I expect you probably felt this way about The Quickening, is as soon as the book is done, then comes the avalanche of great stories.
That's of course correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Alright, any other favorites? You have a chapter here called On a Bender. What is it? What is that all about?
What that was is an early UFO buff who edited a magazine about UFOs and ran a UFO organization.
Right.
He claimed that he was contacted by three men in black who told him the ultimate secret about UFOs, what they were really about, and then took him, well, initially he said that they were government and they told him to shut up about it. As time went on and as the dollar signs kind of arose in his back brain, the story got more convoluted and he went to the planet Kazakh where everybody was naked and it was quite a joyride he had in the UFO. But originally it was just him being involved in UFOs and then three men in black contacting
him. You mean an entire close optional planet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And apparently this story had a good deal of currency among UFO buffs back then. But, you know, the Men in Black were really quite apparent right at the beginning of UFO research, around 47 through the early 50s. In fact, one of the earliest encounters that took place 13 days before the famous Kenneth Arnold encounter where he saw the UFOs over, I think it was Mount Rainier, was the Maury Island affair, and that was the sighting of three donut-shaped UFOs that allegedly dropped metal and slag upon a boat near Tacoma. And after this took place, a man in black the following day contacted the leading witness, a man named Harold Dahl, and told him to keep his mouth shut about it. So it goes right back to the beginning of UFO research.
You did say donut shape, didn't you?
That's right.
I bet that's something a cop would never report. That would get me in a lot of trouble. All right, look, why don't we take some calls?
I'd love it.
And see what the audience has to say about all of this. Here we go. We'll just punch them up. You never know what you're going to get, I'm telling you.
Maybe it's a man in black, eh?
You know, are you a Canadian?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
You're not. But you say, hey, just like a Canadian does.
Okay.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Keith. Hi.
Hello, Art. Is my radio causing interference?
No, I don't hear it.
Okay.
But I would prefer you do not have it on in any form when you get on the air.
Yes, okay. Should I turn it off now?
Yes, you should. Turn it off.
All right, hold on.
Absolutely. Everybody, please do that. It's impossible to conduct a conversation
otherwise. Okay, this is Tim in St. Louis.
Yes, Tim.
I have a couple things just to bring up. One is that it seems to me that in just reading ghost stories, like it, you know, all throughout my life.
Yes.
It seems like I've heard quite a few references actually to women in black. And usually they're, you know, purported to be some sort of ghost of a woman who's been deceased or something like that. But it does seem like women in black have appeared. And something else, the second thing that I'd like to
mention. A lot of them are witches, I suspect.
Maybe. But another thing that I'd like to mention is the total preponderance throughout the British Isles.
Yes.
Of stories of black dogs. And their behavior in animal fashion, of course, is almost identical to what I've heard of the behavior of the men in black.
And let us not forget, black cats.
Yes, but the black dogs are often so much more sinister. They'll appear And, you know, you won't even be able to see their eyes or any part of their face, and then suddenly they'll just vanish into mist, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
Yeah, and supposedly they're, you know, they're familiars of, you know, witches or of, necromancers or something like that. So maybe use Men in Black or something similar.
Fair comment, Jim?
Good point, Tim. One thing that, that what you said reminded me was that trolls and fairies and witches originally were conceived of as being men and women in black. They were identical, but as time has gone by and with fantasization, like for instance the work of Shakespeare, they've been turned into other things. For instance, fairies now have wings and are tiny, but originally witches and trolls and fairies were pretty much the same breed. And like I said, sometimes details drop out in my memory of my research, but now that I think about it, in Ireland, the fairies were men and women in black.
Really?
Yeah.
That isn't the way I pictured a fairy in Ireland at all.
Sure. Sure. From what I understand, it was Shakespeare who turned our heads around about fairies and conceived of them as being kind of sprightly creatures.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Keefe. Good evening.
Hi, Art. This is Chuck from Fresno.
Hi, Chuck.
When I was about 7 or 8 in 1970 or 71, I had no knowledge of Men in Black at that age, and I had a dream where two men in black came to my house, took me and my parents in a big black car, like a Lincoln Continental.
Really?
And they took us to a field that I had never been at that time, and yet later in my life, that was a place that I would go to. A friend's house was near there. And there was a corrugated metal warehouse.
Yes.
Which in that area there actually was it was like a garage where this guy had all these old T-birds.
Yes.
And in there it was very dark, very gothic looking, and there was a suit of armor in there. And then my father was taken to a chopping block, and an executioner was about to cut his head off with a really big axe.
What?
And that's all I remember. And you know, my father's fine, and it was a dream.
It was a dream.
Yeah, but I had a, when I was younger than that, I was supposed in 68, I had a sighting that I can only say it was a dream, yet I think it was real. And I have to wonder if that's connected. And then in about 88, I had a UFO sighting that I know was real, because I had somebody see it, but it was a light in the sky, so you can't see anything.
All right,
that.
Well, then let's translate this to a question for Jim that kind of goes down that alley. Jim, are a lot of the Men in Black sightings, how many of them are ambiguous in the sense that the person, after it's over, is not quite sure whether it was a dream or really happened?
As surprising as it might be, a minimal number. Most of the Men in Black sightings that I have run across tend to be the ones that people want to talk about or get into print or are very significant. And usually the kind of waking dream or the ambiguous ones don't really get communicated that much. So in fact, the number that has to do with dreaming in what I have dug up is minimal.
Pretty small. All right. First time caller line. Whoops, you would have been. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Keefe. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is John from Long Island, New York again.
Hi, John.
I have a question for your guest. Where do these men in black come from?
Well, that's a good question, and I suppose if we had the answer, it would not be a mysterious casebook. We'd simply be telling you where they come from.
We'd be conducting tours there at $15 a pop.
Yeah, that's right. So, do you have a best guess?
Yeah. In fact, I don't have the specific call letters of the military operation that is alleged to be a source of Men in Black encounters, but it is listed in the book, and that is one source. And then on the other hand, the paranormal, if you're looking for those guys' addresses, I think that they cross dimensions, you know, and probably are human, and it takes a lot for me to admit that, but I think their address may be pretty tenuous.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Keefe. Hi.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Are you a screener?
No, we don't have a screener, sir. I'm Art Bell. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, the radio is off.
All right. No, see, we don't screen calls here.
Okay, very good. I have a question with regard to the foliage in the circles and the other forms that are being drawn in fields.
All right. We are not in open lines right now. As you can tell, if you're listening,
I'm listening.
We have a guess.
Well, I thought that...
No, it's not open lines.
Okay,
right.
Very good. I take that as the answer. Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Keefe. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
We're on the air now?
I hope so.
Oh, good. I've been listening to the Men in Black, and I had a question. A lot of the stories I hear about this, it's usually they're trying to discourage people from following up on these UFO experiences.
Yes.
How often have they followed through on their threats? I mean, is there any documented cases where people have been injured? And if so, what is the percentage to the number of people who haven't been injured?
Very, very good question. How many documented cases, Jim, that you heard of where there was follow through?
You know, I've known of a couple of cases where people were beat up. Certainly cases where people were browbeaten and truly harassed verbally. As far as murder, I don't recall any cases. I don't think I list any in the book. I don't think I know of any cases like that.
Of course, you might not.
That's true.
Because saying goes, dead men tell no tales.
How would anyone know?
Yes. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Keefe. Hello.
Hi. So glad to talk to you. Let me tell you about something that I saw, and then you tell me.
All right, where are you here?
Oh, I'm in Montgomery, Alabama.
Okay.
About 1987, something like that, on a 60-minute program, maybe even 2020, they were conducting an interview with a man who, the story was about him having cancer.
Yeah.
Because he worked at a government plant or contracted plant somewhere in the mid-north. And I don't remember where.
Right.
And, he was complaining that he had not been told that anything he was working with could create, you know, a safety hazard.
Right.
And he mentioned something along the lines of EMI or energy transmission device, something like that. While he's talking, there's a picture in a picture, top left hand corner. It's on for 1 or 2 seconds. It's a photograph taken from a telephoto lens showing, it's a boomerang shape. It is not as wide as a boomerang, okay, but it's a boomerang shape, a little narrower.
Yes.
And it's luminescent.
Yes.
There's two helicopters carrying it. It's one on each side of it. And I don't know how wide a helicopter, you know, span is or anything. But there's two helicopters carrying it, and it's a still photo. It was up there for 2 seconds. Okay, everybody is paying attention to what the man's saying, and I'm looking at the television screen going, what is that? We don't have any of those. I wonder if this is not part of some of these aircraft that are being seen. Perhaps not the whole craft, but part of it. Because it was literally luminescent. It wasn't gleaming like chrome or anything like that. And it was a daylight photo.
Does this in any way relate to the Men in Black?
Well, point being is there was no news coverage. There was no mention of it. I couldn't find anybody else that had seen it. And I certainly did wonder if the Men in Black did not pay a visit that very day and maybe even make a telephone call first. So you better have it ready when we get there. Would that be a reason why you would not hear anything? If you see something like that that you've never seen before, well, the aurora comes to mind, but I don't know what the aurora looks like.
Well, here's a theory, and let's run this by Jim. Jim, could it be that the Men in Black don't show up when you get stories that sort of add to the lore and the whoever it is that's controlling all this, you know, doesn't mind. They virtually want it out. But when somebody really gets close to something that's real, then the Men in Black show up. Could that be?
Good call, Art.
All right. We'll be right back. We're going to break here at the top of the hour, and I'll tell you what I would like after the top of the hour. I am going to screen some calls now, and I want only those of you who have encountered Men in Black to call.